It is a tragic paradox of the human condition that, as Aristotle said, we make war so that we can live in peace. For all too often, the only peace we know is the peace of the grave.
And Washington accusing Iranian intelligence agencies of a bizarre plot to murder a Saudi diplomat on American soil.
As researcher, as reporter, as journalist, as writer, it's really, really difficult to know where the truth is.
Nothing particularly has changed in Iran. Everybody knew that they were working on their nuclear capacity and that this nuclear capacity was not merely for electricity. But this is a convenient time. It's a convenient time for Obama to distract from his problems inside the U.S. and from the economy. It's a very convenient time for Netanyahu to distract from Abu Mazen's venture for a U.N. vote over a Palestinian state. I always find it fascinating the way that a crisis kicks in out of nothing.
This hype has been ongoing for decades. The Iranian nuclear program began in 1957, and the hype and concerns about it began around 1984. And since then, we have been on a rolling deadline. And in 1995, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu estimated that Iran will have the nuclear weapons know-how in 3 to 5 years. And now you can flash forward to 2011, and we're still speculating about when Iran will potentially have nuclear weapons.
Israel having a well-known nuclear arsenal, but not being a signatory to the NPT. Iran not having a nuclear arsenal, and yet is under all this pressure. So that's the most frequent double standard argument. And there is something to it. And if the media press have a biases towards the new, things that are new and new developments always get much more attention than things that have been part of the international landscape for some time.
Looking more like a prop from a science fiction film than an aircraft, the alleged drone was unveiled on national Iranian television. One remarkable aspect of the show, the drone seemed mostly undamaged, not what would usually be expected from an aircraft that had crashed. But the generals had an answer for that. They said they used an electronic attack to bring it down. The plane on Iranian TV does appear to be a US spy drone. Iran has demanded an explanation and compensation from Washington, but unofficially, some Pentagon officials have confirmed that a spy drone is missing.
The stealth and electronic technology is so sensitive, Washington reportedly considered a risky mission inside Iran to recover or destroy it.
The US says it was operating over Afghanistan, though it came down deep inside Iranian territory. And there's little doubt that Washington has increased surveillance operations as it tries to find out whether or not Iran is close to making a nuclear weapon. The US president says all options are on the table.
If they are pursuing nuclear weapons, then I have said very clearly that is contrary to the national security interests of the United States.
U.S. analysts say the loss of the Sentinel is a serious setback for U.S. intelligence gathering, and other countries like Russia and China will also be very interested.
As plumes of smoke rose from the compound, protesters grabbed what they could. Portraits of Queen Elizabeth among the material looted. Photocopies of the British, American and Israeli flags ceremoniously set on fire. The EU, the UN and the US all joining Britain in its condemnation.
That kind of behaviour is not acceptable.
The British should go where the Americans went, pack up their things from the spy den and go.
Over NATO's proposed European Missile Defence Shield, Russia sees it as a threat.
We have serious concerns about the conduct of those elections.
Russia's prime minister and would-be president has serious concerns about her comments. He's accused Mrs. Clinton of fomenting unrest in his country.
But the rhetoric between Russia and the United States has again reached Cold War proportions. Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin has accused the US of paying groups to find faults with last weekend's Russian elections. His comments follow a criticism of Russia's fraud-tainted poll by US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
We'll be right back.
Are you intentionally trying to ramp up the pressure on Iran, and given that you've stated that no options are off the table, should we take that to mean that you are considering some other options?
No options off the table means I'm considering all options.
War is nothing but a duel on a larger scale. Countless duels go to make up a war. But a picture of it as a whole can be formed by imagining a pair of wrestlers. Each tries, through physical force, to compel the other to do his will. His immediate aim is to throw his opponent in order to make him incapable of further resistance. War is thus an act of force to compel our enemy to do our will.
I'm a fire starter, twisted fire starter. You're a fire starter, twisted fire starter. I'm a fire starter, twisted fire starter.
Now, I'm trying to make sense of this story here. A Mexican second-hand car dealer plans to kill a Saudi Arabian prince while on a U.S. visit. Blame is put on Iran. Clinton and Geithner splatter financial sanctions on the widescreen. Iranians attack the British embassy. Bang! Meanwhile, the CIA tells us about a drone being missing for 4 days. In a surprisingly undisclosed fashion, Russia begins to rumble about Putin. Iran won't have any of the threatening US postures and shows and on analog screens the missing drone, being not shot down but digitally stolen off US command. The CIA, still in unusually undisclosed fashion, says it's not their drone, it's a yellow painted cardboard model. But the engineering experts from a dozen hostile countries ring the Iranian Foreign Office till the aging phone lines almost melt. So, if you have a lot of grit and capitalism and the whole finance show doesn't move the wagon any longer, start an arms race. But make them a race and produce own profit. Ka-ching! What is an arms race? Well, it's not racing with your arms, but you got to race. As the bank says, you got to race, and you got to win it.
A vital element in keeping the peace is our military establishment. Our arms must be mighty, ready for instant action, so that no potential aggressor may be tempted to risk his own destruction. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
The tragic error of President Wilson was that he ignored this essential point. Modern total war has nothing in common with the limited war of the old dynasties. It is a war against trade and migration barriers, a war of the comparatively overpopulated countries against the comparatively underpopulated. It is a war to abolish those institutions which prevent the emergence of a tendency toward an equalization of wage rates all over the world. It is a war of the farmers tilling poor soil against those governments which bar them from access to much more fertile soil lying fallow. It is, in short, a war of wage earners and farmers who describe themselves as underprivileged have-nots against the wage earners and farmers of other nations whom they consider privileged haves.
American presidents lie for many reasons. Richard Nixon did it during Watergate to try to save his presidency. Bill Clinton lied about Monica Lewinsky to try to salvage his reputation, maybe his marriage. But when presidents don't tell the truth about war, as has consistently been the case with George W. Bush, the public has every right to ask, are they lying to protect the country or lying to protect themselves? Since the U.S.-led invasion 4 years ago, here at the Fifth Estate, we've covered Iraq and the war on terror from virtually every angle. The military, the media, intelligence, politics, revealing aspects of the story that you didn't find anywhere else. Now, we'll put all of that together to reveal what was true, what was not, and how those false or misleading words and ideas have left Iraq and arguably the world far more dangerous places than they were before. And as we watch that same pattern emerge again, this time in White House statements about Iran, its support of terrorism, and its nuclear threat, it's worth considering how we got to where we are today, the lies that led to war.
And I still, to this day, counsel, don't see anything wrong with taking the Ayatollah's money and sending it to support the Nicaraguan freedom fighters.
They have basically said to the entire United States, we don't care what the people say, we don't care what the Congress says, we don't care what the other oversight organizations say, we're going to find some way to rid the planet of communism, and we don't care who gets killed in the process.
As long as there is breath in this body, I will speak and work, strive and struggle for the cause of the Nicaraguan freedom fighters.
Freedom fighters, they are not. They are terrorists.
Wait a minute. This isn't the way the Constitution was set up. This isn't what the Founding Fathers intended.
You start out breaking foreign laws, since most countries have laws against secretly overthrowing their governments, and then you end up breaking the law at home.
Sometimes you have to go above the written law.
They were willing to literally put the Constitution at risk because they believed somehow there was a higher order of things.
We have liberty. And the only way we're going to keep liberty is to have people who are strong, like Reagan and North.
Violence is not the answer. You don't teach the democratic way by shoving an M16 down somebody's throat.
If we continue these policies to rob ourselves in order to feed this national security monster, we are going to continue to degrade American life.
We're only talking about subverting the Constitution, that's all.
What would be traditionally military roles.
When you use these contractors, you gain a lot of efficiencies, you gain a lot of expertise and specialization.
It was devastating because they took over my job. I ended up doing nothing. We had to train these KBR contractors how to fix these radios. We had to walk them through all the basic steps. But when I could be actively becoming a better soldier and becoming more proficient in my job instead of having to sit up on guard duty to wait around while KBR contractors are doing the job that I had to train them to do. Across the board, people lost their jobs. Quartermaster companies, mechanic, any logistics soldiers were involved with, their jobs were outsourced to KBR.
They were only concerned with making their profit and didn't care how it may affect the troops.
Of the 67 water treatment plants that Halliburton run, 63 of them weren't providing safe water. And the Marines are showering in it every single day.
Sorry.
I was there to help them. There's a lot of soldiers over there. They might come home without a bullet wound, but there's a lot of them that are going to come home with pathogens in their blood because of Halliburton. And they don't even know to get tested for it unless somebody tells them. And I'm sure Halliburton is not going to be the company to tell them.
The soldiers are sleeping on these little cots out in the middle of the desert. While these KBR executives are driving these $40,000 vehicles.
They and their secretaries are driving at least a $30,000 to $40,000 vehicle. This secretary lives in this complex, eats her meals in this complex, has her laundry delivered to her, has no reason to go anywhere at any time, but has a brand new top of the line Ford or Chevy pickup with everything imaginable on it that you could put on it.
Chrome rims and leather interior and CD players and all these extra amenities that, you know, you don't really need in wartime.
Why do they need an H2 Hummer? Why do they have Cadillac Escalades in Iraq for Halliburton managers? What is the purpose?
One invoice that I saw was for about $7,000 for 1 month for a SUV on a lease. It was a 3-year contract. Comes up to roughly $250,000. A vehicle that you and I could purchase at the local dealership for probably top of the line $45,000. And the taxpayer paid $250,000 and never did own the vehicle.
Somebody has to do this work. And the Halliburton thing is just an outrageous effort to associate the vice president with the activities of a company with which he has no connection. No connection at all.
Congressional critics are questioning whether Dick Cheney helped Halliburton get billions.
The FBI has revealed it is expanding its investigation into how Halliburton Company billed taxpayers for its contract work in Iraq.
And it now appears some of those contracts were awarded with the knowledge and approval of the vice president's office, which would seem to contradict his previous statements.
As vice president, I have absolutely no influence of, involvement of, knowledge of, in any way, shape, or form of contracts.
The next adventure. Otherwise, the population is going to pay attention to what's happening to them, you know, which is a big assault, you know, a major assault on the population, just as they did in the 1980s. They're replaying the record almost exactly. The first thing they did in the 1981 was drive the country into a big deficit. This time they did it with a tax cut for the rich and the biggest increase in federal spending in 20 years. You know, you combine those two, you go from a budget surplus to a budget deficit. If you have a deficit, you have to have Alan Greenspan showing up with a long face and talking about fiscal responsibility, which means cutting the already low level of benefits for people, lack of job security. It happens to be an unusually corrupt administration, so it's kind of like an Enron administration. So there's a tremendous amount of profit going into the hands of an unusually corrupt group of gangsters, and you can't really have all this stuff on the front pages, so you got to push it off the front pages. You have to keep people from thinking about it, and there's only one way that anybody ever figured out to frighten them, and they're good at it. That they did it, that's their experience, and they'll keep doing it. So there's domestic political factors have to do with timing. September 11th gave the pretext, and there's a long-term interest, serious interest, so they got to go to war. You know, the only question is how they'll work it out.
My service, but all I could feel was shame. And racism could no longer mask the reality of the occupation. These were people, these were human beings. I've since been plagued by guilt anytime I see an elderly man, like the one who couldn't walk, who we rolled onto a stretcher and told the Iraqi police to take him away. I feel guilt anytime I see a mother with her children, like the one who cried hysterically and screamed that we are worse than Saddam as we forced her from her home. I feel guilt anytime I see a young girl, like the one I grabbed by the arm and dragged into the street. We were told we were fighting terrorists. The real terrorist was me, and the real terrorism is this occupation. Racism within the military has long been an important tool to justify the destruction and occupation of another country. It has long been used to justify the killing, subjugation, and torture of another people. Racism is a vital weapon employed by this government. It is more important weapon than a rifle, a tank, a bomber, or a battleship. It is more destructive than an artillery shell, or a bunker buster, or a Tomahawk missile. While those weapons are created and owned by this government, they are harmless without people willing to use them. Those who send us to war do not have to pull a trigger or lob a mortar round. They do not have to fight the war, they merely have to sell the war. They need a public who's willing to send their soldiers into harm's way. They need soldiers who are willing to kill and be killed without question.
Live up to the high ideals that we passionately proclaim, and to bring the initial dream of the United Nations closer to fulfillment, we should think explicitly and carefully about crucial choices that have been made and continue to be made every day. Not forgetting, quoting Musty again, not forgetting the violence on which the present system is based and all the evil, material and spiritual, this entails for the masses of men throughout the world. Among these masses are, for example, 6 million children who die every year because of lack of simple medical procedures that the rich countries could make available within statistical error in their budgets. And it includes 1 billion people on the edge of starvation or worse, but not beyond reach by any means. And we should also not forget, never forget, that our wealth derives in no small measure from the tragedy of others.
He had a name, he had an unlikely name.
Yeah, the deranged millionaire. The deranged millionaire. He lived in a secret location, burning money all day. And people from miles around were miles away.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm a Christian, but you don't need to be in the pew every Sunday to know that there's something wrong in this country when gays can serve openly in the military, but our kids can't openly celebrate Christmas or pray in school. As president, I'll end Obama's war on religion, and I'll fight against liberal attacks on our religious heritage. Faith made America strong. It can make her strong again. I'm Rick Perry, and I approve this message.
If we look at the will of the current world system, economic system, the way money exists, if we look at the will of the system, we can see that it is not guaranteed that everyone will survive, that everyone will be fed, that everyone will get an education, that everyone will receive health care, that everyone will receive what they need to develop into an effective human being that has the opportunity to live life to its fullest. We can see that in the current system, that is not the will of the system. And that's obviously evidenced by the fact that there are so many people that are without even the most basic stuff that they need to fulfill their basic human rights of survival and dignified living conditions. So obviously, the will of the current system is malicious. It is that of ill will.
starting in D.C. today, where the Department of Labor has released a report linking America's high jobless numbers to the fact that a full 35% of the population now has facial tattoos. The report says that employers are reluctant to hire otherwise qualified candidates if their faces are covered in tribal marks or tiger stripes. This gentleman here speaks to that phenomenon.
It's definitely tough out there for people with face tattoos. I mean, obviously a lot of people are real judgmental, real stuck in their place. Just because I clearly lack good judgment doesn't mean I won't make a good employee.
The Department of Labor is urging jobless Americans to at the very least have their resumes tattooed to their faces, and they are expecting those jobless numbers to increase now that Vice President Joe Biden has taken away some of the stigma of the facial tattoo by getting the Air Jordan logo on his face earlier this week.
And today we're setting a new target of helping 6 million people.
The Germans might have lost the war. We won the peace, yeah, that's for sure. Papa, good so far. Deutschland über alles, yeah. Then the schnitzel hits a fan. Stupend up our master plan. Portugal and Spain both went down the drain. Why can't the Swiss take care of this? Now here we go again.
Britain will now have less of a say in decisions which could be vital to its economic future.
A Franco-Germanic proverb says, one Mkhosi a day keeps the Cameron away.
I'm not frightened.
We join the Eurozone,
no longer on our own.
The Celtic tiger roared neath rainbow bright. We found our pot of gold, but like in tales of old, that lovely pot of gold was just a pile of shite.
Have you ever thought about doing a financial voodoo session? No? You never heard about it? Okay, let me tell you. First, you must find a print of the pyramid with the evil eye on it. Then you put on a wild rhythm. After that, you take one of your grandma's metal knitting needles, heat it to a bright color, and start slowly poking the eye. Don't rush it. Swirl it a bit around and finish it off with a few fast, short stabs. Ah, great voodoo.
When I run through these streets, so I have to hide from CCTV and everyone. When I run through these streets, 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 when I run through these streets.
Expected year was urgent action to address climate change, and certainly the biggest problem here was the lack of ambition.
South Africa's Durban climate is very good for marijuana, but less useful to agree on some future economic climate in order to deal with climate. The negotiations of 180 or so players became sadder by the day as the conference proceeded. But then, alas, the Kepler planet was discovered by astronomers. An Earth-like planet in the Goldilocks zone, potentially livable. Then suddenly, at the last minute of the climate conference, agreement was reached by all the nations. I can't quite remember what actually was agreed, but I suppose they may think that Kepler must have at least porridge-eating bears. And everyone went home to their own respective wild, erratic, climate-threshed lands. So, don't go to Durban, even though it's a terrific toque. Instead, go to Keppel. But believe me, all what you see is the equivalent of our medieval age, since this spare Earth is 600 light years away and even may have porridge-eating bears. Who knows?
You can check all the web details at kaputradio.libsyn.com.